What do we stand on? What are our foundations? As I thought about these questions, I had beside me a rock that had traveled through my life, a real fossil-filled rock. This is it, cut and polished, shaped to bring out the beautiful images that are in it of the fossils. To me, these images look like ancient spacecraft flying through the cosmos. It made me think of how vast this universe is, and then how many thousands of galaxies there are, and then I had to come back home to this beautiful blue-green earth of ours that is our foundation. The fossil in my hand here has been around for millions of years. I want you to imagine existing for millions of years, as the earth has, pressed and pushed and folded, vegetation composting into earth, gradually earth getting harder and harder and changing into rock, and then more pressure and more pushing and hardening, millions of years of that. And this is what we stand on. And if it wasn't as solid as it was, and been pressed and pushed and settled for those millions of years, it wouldn't be solid enough to hold us here. And yet, our foundations are not all made of earth. The children were asking here this morning, where do we come from? And we can ask ourselves that very same question in relationship to our foundations. Where did we come from? We come from family experience, our birth order, how many parents we had, and what we all did together. Our foundations also come from the culture that we grew up in the geography that surrounded us, our country and her history. Our foundations are also our theological history and what we believe and the values that we live by. Today, sitting here in the West Coast, as John mentioned and Allegra mentioned earlier, We live in relative peacefulness here. It's hard to imagine that in our tradition, back in the 1500s, that people died. People like our ancestors, Michael Servetus and Francis David, they died for simply speaking what they believed. And what they believed was that God was a unity, not a trinity. And because they risked and lost their lives, we have religious freedom today. Like the fossils in this stone, their bodies died that we may walk on a foundation of religious tolerance today. So let me tell you a little story about our faith. Some of you may already know this one, part of our Unitarian Foundation. I want you to first imagine, as David talked earlier, Unitarians come from an area in Eastern Europe, or what is known as Eastern Europe today, a place called Transylvania, which is now what we know as Romania. Transylvania, yes, 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 we all know that from Dracula, which is a made-up story and happened a lot later than our 1500s beginning of Unitarianism. It was an interesting time because where Transylvania was, it was a geography that was being pressed both from the east. The Muslims were moving west. The Catholics in the new Protestant movement, the Reformation, was pressing east. And Transylvania kind of was a hot place to be at the time. King Sigismund, who was to become the first Unitarian king, he was actually crowned king when he was only 2 weeks old because his father had died. Well, for his mother, for obvious reasons, Queen Isabella and an advisor were made his regents, and they led the country until he was old enough to reign. And he stepped into the role of king when his mother died, when he was only 15 years old. Imagine yourself at 15 with that kind of responsibility. He was an amazing young man. In Transylvania, like everywhere in Europe, there had been huge fights over what was called the doctrine of God, which means that they were debating what the meaning of God was. What was God? And many people were driven out of their homes. Churches were burned down. People were tortured, imprisoned. It was a dangerous time. They were fighting over the souls of people for their beliefs, but I would suggest also they were fighting for territory and they were fighting for power. Whose story was going to win? Queen Isabella, John Sigismund's mother, 2 years before she died, created a law of toleration in which it was decreed that the population could believe what they chose and they were to refrain from killing people who thought differently than them. It's called the Edict of Torda. And this law, designed to keep the peace, was quite remarkable for its time, as Europe, as I've said, was an incredibly intolerant place. The effect of this law was to at least make possible some public conversation around what people believed. King Sigismund, when he was 25, ordered a debate to finally settle this huge controversy between Trinitarianism and Arianism, which is what it was called at the time, or the unity of God. So this debate, it started at 5 a.m. every morning, lasted all day for 10 days. And in the end, the great Unitarian speaker, Francis David, won the day. And then King Sigismund and his entire court declared themselves to be Unitarians, and the majority of his country followed. The king's only demand was that those who disagreed lived in peace with those whom they differed. King Sigismund and his mother, Queen Isabella, made tolerance a hallmark of their reign, and for the times, this was truly revolutionary. Thus, toleration is one of the theological foundations on which we stand today, as is freedom of religious belief, as is a rational approach to religious thinking. So is the value of living peacefully with those who believe differently. So is respect for the inherent worth and dignity of every person. So is debating the issues. It feels to me that to tolerate someone in our modern use of that word is to somehow keep the person at arm's length, though. Times have changed, and the meaning of that has changed. For example, let's say I tolerate my neighbor's cooking smells, right? Meaning I don't really like the smells. They're different from my smells, but I'm not going to complain. I won't become intolerant. Well, described like that, you can see that to be tolerant is not such a radical stance anymore. Certainly not revolutionary like it was back in 1568. Today, I'd like to think that we've moved a step up from toleration to an understanding that we need to more than tolerate those who think and believe and live differently than us. I suggest that we need to move towards radical acceptance. For radical acceptance, I suggest that there are three things that we need. First of all, we need curiosity, which is an honest and sincere desire to learn and understand the world from another person's point of view. And to be curious keeps one open, right? Both your mind and your heart. Curiosity allows for an openness of the unexpected. Curious takes you through the door that you've never been. Curious invites adventure, and curious is the hallmark, I say, of an educated person. Second, I would suggest we need willingness. Willingness to question our own habitual ways of being in the world, of seeing and understanding. Willingness to become flexible. And here I suggest is one another important one, a willingness that we might possibly be wrong. And the third foundation of radical acceptance, I suggest, is courage. We need courage when we go through that door we've never been before and are confronted by ideas or behaviors that are unfamiliar, that may challenge us and make us feel uncomfortable or even threatened. So earlier I said our foundations come from our history, what we believe and the values that we live by. As Unitarians, we do not believe alike, but we are surprisingly similar in the values that we uphold. Our highest values are integrity, caring, compassion, social justice, and truth. I suggest we need them all to practice radical acceptance. Some say that integrity is the value that Unitarians hold highest. I think to stand on a foundation of integrity means that one's thoughts and actions are consistent with one's beliefs, that there's a feeling or a sense in oneself of wholeness, which is actually the Latin root for integrity. It comes from the adjective integer, which means whole or complete. So what does integrity look like in a person? King Sigismund had the integrity of his beliefs and his convictions. He lived his value of toleration in all he said and did. A little closer to our time, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela. All men, I think, of great integrity. When Gandhi walked the path of nonviolent resistance in the face of violence, he changed a nation. So did Mandela when he spoke truth to power. And so does every child when they speak up against bullying. This is what integrity looks like in a person. What does integrity look like in a society? Well, this week, as John mentioned, is the Truth and Reconciliation Commission has come to Vancouver. I hope some of you were able to go, and if not, watched it live stream on the computer. My colleague, Reverend Meg Roberts, has headed up the Unitarian team that's participating in the march this morning. But she's also gone down to the proceedings every day. And every day she's brought back stories, moving stories, of a society, Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal, practicing integrity, practicing living in right relationship with each other. This entire process is about healing the integrity of our Canadian society. If integrity is about a wholeness of action and a principle that we value, then what has been done to the Aboriginal peoples of Canada, the first peoples of this country, and the fact that it has been denied and suppressed and ignored, destroys the very foundation of our society. We are not living with integrity. Harm was done. Harm was done to the children of Aboriginal and Inuit and Métis people. They were taken from their families, forced to live in schools many miles away from their parents, and many of them didn't see their parents for years and years. They were not allowed to speak their first languages nor practice their religion, and if they were caught, they were often punished for doing so. These are the facts. The Anglican, United, Baptist, and Catholic churches and the Canadian government supported and enabled this process. These are facts. And the last residential school closed in 1996. So this is not ancient history. And because of one British Columbian Aboriginal man who took his claim to the Supreme Court of Canada, the Indian Residential School Settlement Agreement was created by the Supreme Court, and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was established. And this is good, because the stories need to be told, and the stories need to be heard. The pain, it needs to be witnessed, and we as a society need to come back into integrity with ourselves, all our people, and our whole history. Now, the Commission works from a set of principles, and we understand as Unitarians how important principles are. Here are some of them. The process that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission will move with, will be supported by, the foundation of it, will be public and transparent, accountable, open and honorable, comprehensive, inclusive, educational, holistic, just, fair, respectful, voluntary, flexible, and forward-looking in terms of rebuilding and renewing Aboriginal relationships and the relationship between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal Canadians. This is good. The stories I'm about to share were told to me by Reverend Roberts as she witnessed them. Because the principles of respect, inclusiveness, and transparency are integral to the healing process, when someone disagrees with someone else, they are not silenced. So a man came to the front of the stage and expressed his disagreement with the speaker who was in the podium. And rather than silencing him or ignoring him or arresting him, one of the elder grandmothers came forward who was on the stage, came to the front of the stage, held his hand, looked him directly in the eyes, and listened to him. Listened to his words. Respect, transparency, inclusiveness. This is what integrity looks like in a society. In a workshop, another Aboriginal man expressed his emotional reaction on seeing a priest present wearing a clerical collar. He owned his reaction, he named it to the group, and he spoke about it. And did you know that the Catholic Church has not yet acknowledged or apologized for their participation in the residential school history? Little wonder that there still exists anger and frustration and pain there. But in this gathering this week, that priest listened. This is an example of deep listening. He listened to the story. He listened to what his presence had evoked in this other man. And it's when we listen deeply and really hear the other person, healing begins. Accountability, openness, respect. This is integrity in our society. This is returning to our wholeness. And at the end of this workshop, Reverend Roberts tells me that one of the health support workers, each person who talked about an experience they had in residential schools, were supported by a cadre of health support workers. She asked that the tissues be gathered up that had been cried in through the work, through the telling of these stories, because they held the tears and the pain of this truth speaking, gathered up and taken to the sacred ceremonial fire and put back in ceremony. Honorable, holistic, and respectful. This is integrity in society. The foundations of our country, Canada, and the foundations of our theology and the foundations of our individual lives come together. They must, if integrity is our value. We stand on the foundations of those who came before us. King Sigismund laid the first foundation of toleration. Now it's our work to build on it. We can live our lives in right relationship with our world and our neighbors by taking toleration one step farther, by practicing radical acceptance. As a first step towards this goal, we need to move into integrity with our history in this country. We need to be willing, curious, and courageous to hear the ugly and the painful stories of the Aboriginal, Inuit, and Métis people. We need to listen with our hearts open, not getting defensive. They don't want us to feel guilty. They just want to be heard. And we need to witness the period of the residential schools and acknowledge that a great wrong was done. And then, and only then, Can we move toward a radical acceptance of all people, including the first Canadians, including ourselves? In this way, we will honor our heritage and the foundations of our faith, and we will build a new society, one that respects the inherent worth and dignity of all people. And then we will all live with integrity. Thank you.